It won't surprise you that success cannot be achieved without total commitment, but it may surprise you that in most cases, optimal performance in golf is achieved when we feel like we're not giving 110%, when we're not over-aroused. It is important, perhaps, for a defensive tackle to be aroused and to feel like he's giving 110% on a goal line stand. The biggest problem that I see in competitive golf is what I call 80% commitment and 110% effort. Players are not really sure if they are committed to this swing or another, and then they try to compensate with excess effort, excess arousal, and excess emotion. There's a feeling of quiet confidence when we are 100% committed and only give 80% effort.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
What's up, MGP listeners? We got a solo episode today with myself, Jordan Hagel. We are talking about mental training for golf. So the context of this is when Andy and I went out to Sand Hills with our host, Steve Erickson. We, had a 8 or 9 hour drive, and we're talking about golf and courses, and Steve has been a great supporter of the podcast, and he passed me it's probably like a 15 page, a little bit more than that, what do we got here, 23 page document. He's like, I've listened to some of your mental podcasts, and I think you would enjoy this. And so I read it on our way there, and since reading it, it's really changed my perspective on, you know, there's a lot of aspects of the mental game. There's your course management, and there's just, you know, how you approach the game, how you think about yourself and your game, and, you know, taking a look in the mirror, and some of the recent comments about, or from Scottie Scheffler talking about, you know, just perspective on the game, I think is super important, and being really real with yourself about, you know, how you can get the most out of your game. And then also, you know, it's not just a physical game, but it's how you approach it. And this goes into all types of athletes and different types of sports. And golf is a really interesting one. And so I'm gonna read this 23 pages, and I think, you know, it was helpful for me. It'll be helpful for those listening. And we'll get into it. So it starts with, in golf, it's not enough to be physically talented. Even if your physical skills are combined with a good understanding of the golf swing, athletes who have the most success stress the importance of the proper mental attitude and skills that enable them to get the most out of their athletic ability. Clearly, if golf were just a test of physical skills, then they would hold all of the tournaments on the practice tees. The attitudes that predict whether a player will have success are what I call constructive thinking attitudes or skills. These are the things that enable a player to get the most out of their ability. There are a small number of these mental characteristics that I think separate the great players from the poor players. Some of these things are, number one, an extraordinary degree of self-acceptance and self-trust. Number two, an extraordinary independence from your environment and an unusual ability to remain detached from what is going on around you. Number three, an efficient perception of reality and a comfortable relationship with it. Number four, a problem-centered, goal-oriented, and achievement-motivated attitude. Number five, a capacity for vivid appreciativeness and childlike quality of seeing something new or good in almost every experience. The first quality of self-acceptance. Great golfers accept themselves and their golf games. They accept their shortcomings for the most part. That's not to say, however, that they are self-satisfied. In fact, they are always working at self-improvement. They are not crippled by the fact that their golf swings are not perfect. Scottie Scheffler is a great, great example of this, by the way. Acceptance leads to trust, and trust leads to confidence. Great players are always seeking improvement, but they are not so obsessed with it that they cannot take pleasure in their present or past performances. When a player accepts himself and trusts himself, he can be patient. I mean suppressing the tendency to see effects from hard work, skill, or play. Nearly all of us at one time or another have seen how straining for effects devastates our golf game. And independence from the environment. Great players are less likely to be affected by bad weather, galleries, bad pairings, or other potentially adverse conditions. They are relatively independent of good opinion of others. They are relatively independent of the good opinion of others. They are relatively serene and happy in the midst of circumstances that may adversely affect lesser players. They can accept that even par is a good performance in a U.S. Open. They are strong enough to be self-contained. They don't worry about what others think about their swings. Their rewards are inner, individual, and not social. They're not dependent on what others think or do. The honors, the awards, rewards, and status achieved from their golf are less important than self-development, self-improvement, and inner growth. The characteristic of detachment, the ability to stay within oneself, is an invariable element of great players. An efficient perception of reality. All of us have little neuroses, and they affect how we perceive the world. We can actually prejudice our perception of reality by not being able to see the environment as it really is. Great players have a comfortable relationship with reality. They know they can't carry a 210-yard water hazard with a 6-iron. Problem-centeredness. In golf, as in life, if we aim at nothing, we'll surely hit nothing. We need a long-range set of goals that are realistic and can also be achieved. But more importantly, to achieve those goals, we need to arrive at an understanding of the work that needs to be done in order to achieve those goals. In other words, we need a specific set of short-term goals that will serve as the stages through which we must pass in order to reach the final objectives. In addition, these short-term goals will keep us focused on a target that we can achieve. You need to make a commitment to these goals and believe in them. The short-term goals should be shared with others. We've learned from our many clinical experiences that in order for changes to come about, you'll need the help of the important people in your life. For example, you may need more time for practice, on-the-course practice, off-the-course practice, both physical and mental exercises that you decide are part of your short-term goal. It's important to put these things in writing. They serve as reminders of what you are committed to, what you're working on. This will help you stay goal-oriented. The more goal or target-oriented you are, the faster you will improve. In determining what your target goal is, whether it's the next shot to an island green or a more long-term goal, it's important to keep it simple and perform the necessary action in the absence of a great deal of self-talk, especially the negative variety. Vivid appreciativeness. One of the first lessons I learned about great players was how much they enjoyed playing golf, their golf shots and their golf swings. They are able to understand that they are not machines and that they're not perfect. They are stable in the face of hard knocks, frustrations, and bad luck. They bounce back. They can appreciate the time that they spent on the golf course and that they spend on the golf course. They can be childlike in their appreciation of subtle nuances. They can admire the beauty of a golf course. Despite the threat held by the ability of other golfers, they can admire others' talent or skills without envy or hostility. So we've talked a little bit about goals. We hear about goals all the time, but what about the thing that motivates the goals, the mission or purpose in life? What is your mission in life? What do you stand for? What are you trying to accomplish in your career? You know that champions in any walk of life know what they stand for. They have clearly defined goals, they have game plans, and they have purposes. They have ideals that they are trying to stick to. This power of purpose motivates everything in their lives. Spend some time thinking about your mission in life. Is it to be the best that you can be? Is it to be the best golfer you can be? In order to pursue your mission, you'll need to strengthen your unique qualities and acquire new qualities that other champions possess. Spend some time reviewing just what qualities are necessary to become a champion in golf, and think of an individual who has each quality. If it's intense, focused, concentration, is it Jack Nicklaus, Ben Hogan, or Nolan Ryan? Or is it you? If it's diligence, the ability to work hard or something physical, is it Mark O'Meara, or is it Bernard Langer, or is it Joey Sindelar? who has this capacity. List all of these qualities and then reaffirm your commitment to increasing your strength in these areas, or jot down an action plan to improve these abilities, the ones that you don't possess enough of. Next, review your own success. Think about the 10 or 12 most significant accomplishments you've made. Review and rehearse each of these successes. Call upon these memories to help you through the tough times. Develop a personal highlight film that consists of the best moments that you've ever had. These successes are part of you, but we can go so much further by tapping into other strengths and eliminating the weaknesses. Think about your success and how you achieved it. What special qualities do you possess that enabled you to accomplish these goals? Be proud of these qualities and build upon this foundation. And finally, in order to achieve the success that you know you deserve, consider what psychological and physical skills you need to acquire to be the best you can be. Are you as patient as you can be? Are you easily frustrated? Do you give up on your game plan if it doesn't show immediate results? How's your putting, your chipping, your sand game? Do you practice the phases of the game that you're best at, or the ones that you need the most? Are you committed enough on improvement, on your improvement program, to write down your weekly practice schedule and then stay committed to it? And remember, scientific research clearly shows that a combination of mental training with physical training accelerates learning and improves performance. So set and write down achievable small goals. Most of us know it is easier to play well when we play one shot at a time, and when we don't try to win the tournament on the second shot of the day. Your brain is a complex goal-seeking mechanism. It's looking for small goals to achieve. It's difficult for your brain to translate, "I want to beat 154 guys and win this tournament," into an action plan. On the other hand, it's easy for the brain to adopt a this-shot mentality. I need to hit this shot with a little draw on the green 160 yards away. Lee Trevino once told me that the biggest problem he sees on the PGA Tour is that the goals tend to be too big. He prefers tiny, tiny goals. To some people, this implies settling for something less than your best, a less noble or less heroic plan. In actuality, of course, you perform better and achieve higher goals when you commit to this approach. You need to be 100% committed and give 80% effort. It won't surprise you that success cannot be achieved without total commitment, but it may surprise you that in most cases, optimal performance in golf is achieved when we feel like we're not giving 110%, when we're not over-aroused. It is important, perhaps, for a defensive tackle to be aroused and to feel like he's giving 110% on a goal line stand. The biggest problem that I see in competitive golf is what I call 80% commitment and 110% effort. Players are not really sure if they are committed to this swing or another that they're working on, and then they try to compensate with excess effort, excess arousal, and excess emotion. There's a feeling of quiet confidence when we are 100% committed and only give 80% effort, a feeling that I'm playing really well, and if I try any harder, I'd shoot 58. The paradox is, of course, if we tried harder, performance would break down. As with a small goal approach, it's important for you to understand that this is difficult, especially for the more perfectionist and mentally inflexible who feel it is almost sinful not to hit every shot or every drive as if their life depends on the outcome of the shot. Most of us know that a relationship exists between arousal and attention. As our arousal increases, the range of cues that an individual uses to direct his behavior becomes restricted, thus limiting performance. Increases in arousal tend to reduce a person's ability to shift from one attention style to another. Under pressure, individuals tend to shift to attentional models that might be inappropriate. In addition to a narrowing and a reduction in the shifting ability, increasing arousal also results in attention becoming internally focused. Golf demands an external focus most of the time. By increasing your internal focus, this may result in what is commonly called choking or yipping. Next, set a goal to learn to listen better, especially learn to listen to better successful people. To what do they attribute their success? Usually, they will identify behavioral qualities rather than mechanical or physical causes for their success. Listen carefully to tournament winners as they discuss their victory. You'll rarely hear them say that they won because their swing was finally fixed or they won because of their equipment, unless they're paid to say that. When Jack Nicklaus won the Masters in 1986, it seemed to me that he attributed his victory to concentration and attention and to two circumstances that helped him to focus his attention. The first circumstance was the newspaper article that called him too old to win the Masters, which he taped to his refrigerator to keep him focused on his goal. The second circumstance was the fourth day pressure, which he said helped him to putt well. He had not putted well early in the year, he said, possibly because his attention was not focused by his interests. And learn to use what I call my cause of the crash method of analysis. When a car pulls out in front of another car and a collision occurs, the newspaper reads that the cause of the crash was determined to be excessive speed or unsafe start or perhaps improper left-hand turn. These may very well be the physical features that contributed to the collision, but the cause of the crash was the poor judgment of the driver, the poor mental control of the driver who was inattentive. Perhaps he was angry at his wife, perhaps hurrying to make his 2 o'clock appointment or feeling entitled to be ahead of the driver approaching the intersection. How many times have you heard someone say, that swing will never hold up under pressure? Well, that statement is true about every golf swing that is connected to a faulty mind. The real issue, of course, is fixing the faulty mind first. The conclusion we usually make about faulty mechanical swings is, well, first we have to fix the swing. But even a faulty golf swing will repeat itself if the mind it is connected to is functioning well. And thus, we can explain the success of players who have unusual swings. And our instructors may find many, many faults with those swings. But the idea is not to pattern your swing after a faulty swing, but to learn how the mind works of the person with the faulty swing. How does it help them to produce successful golf shots time after time? Sometimes we could all use a little guidance in how to process information and what information to process. A player needs to be able to control his thoughts and emotions, and we've learned a lot from a tip Sherlock Holmes gave to Dr. Watson. He said, I consider that a man's brain originally is like an empty attic, and if you have to stock it with such functions as you choose, a fool takes in all the lumber of every sort that he comes across. Now, the skilled workman is very careful, indeed, as to what he takes into his brain attic. He will have nothing but the tools which may help him in doing his work. But of these, he has a large assortment, and all in the most perfect order. It is a mistake to think that the little room has elastic walls and can distend to any extent. Depend upon it that there comes a time when for every addition of knowledge, you forget something that you knew before. I think this tells us that sometimes we need what I call a garage sale to clean out our brain attics, to get rid of the thoughts and emotions that can't possibly help us to perform better. I think there are 6 information processing stages that lead to peak performance in golf. The first one, mental training phase, which is done prior to the tournament. This includes all levels that we have discussed on this so far, and in the relaxation tape, the personal highlight film, etc., your pre-tournament mental training. The second stage is the attunement stage. What we're trying to do here is control our internal environment. Expect a good performance, control our emotions, use non-emotion focused coping. Attempt to prepare in a way consistent with our best performances. Use an optimal peak performance set. Have consistent pre-shot mechanics. The third stage is the visualization, auditorization, or imagery stage. Visualize your shot. What does it take to perform the shot? You may feel something in your swing, the necessary trigger at a low level. The fourth stage, the narrowing your focus of attention stage. Concentrate on only one cue in your swing. A smooth takeaway, your tempo, your club face above your hands, etc. Block out all other distractors, all other thoughts. Use a mental toughness approach. This is the proper club. This is the right shot. Be committed. The fifth phase is the execution phase. Remember, give 80% effort and 100% commitment to the stroke. Feel ready, enthusiastic, and challenged. And remember, knowledge of performance is more important than knowledge of results. Thus, don't think about the outcome, only performing the act, and try hard to perform the act. It's already programmed to succeed. Use a shallow level of attention. And the final phase stage is the sixth stage, the evaluation stage. With the mind like water, evaluate the results. Use this feedback to learn from your performance and the outcome. Adjust your mechanics, adjust your attitude to the results. a guiding principle, again, of course, is the 100% commitment and the 80% effort routine. Many athletes report playing better when they're sick or injured. They conserve energy. They say to themselves, well, I'm as prepared as I can be under the circumstances. I just have to perform now and not worry about the consequences. This is the 80% effort style. You are still committed, but you don't overtry. In between shots, try to get off the golf course. Many athletes report feelings of fatigue because they attempted to focus attention and give 110% for 8 to 10 hours on the golf course and in their practice sessions. Play around your shots. Play 48 minutes of golf. And remember, the optimal attitude set. Enthusiasm leads to more energy. Depression, despair, and pessimism decreases energy, decreases imagery. Attain the right attitude, and the optimal attitude is one in which we're trying to have fun, feel challenged, feel enthusiastic, and be relaxed. We block out fear, anxiety, and tension, the emotions and thoughts that lead to poor performances. I'm not suggesting that it's easy to stay relaxed and have a great attitude, especially when things don't go your way. But what I am saying is that you can teach yourself to have a better attitude, to find a better way of handling the challenge. Mental toughness is learned. You can be a mentally tough competitor. You've already learned to be one. It has nothing to do with your hereditary or intelligence. It's an acquired, learned skill. The process through which it's acquired is precisely the same as the one that you use to develop your golf swing. It takes some hard work, it takes some understanding, and it takes practice. And the point is, if you want to be mentally tougher, you can. Think of life as a tournament every day. You'll be judged not on your performance today or yesterday or even next month, but how you handle the challenge over the long haul of your lifetime. You need to attain a consistency of your self-concept. And this is the element that will enable you to raise your average level of performance, consistency, and to achieve your peak performance more often. The ultimate measure of mental toughness is consistency. If we think about Pete Rose or Jack Nicklaus, one element is always the same. A remarkable level of performance consistency. Each of these people has gained a high degree of control over the process of playing in the upper range of their capabilities. The distinguishing trademark of these players is not so much exceptional talent, but rather exceptional ability to consistently play to the peak of their talent. I'm convinced that the mental attitudes that facilitate peak performance are not that difficult to acquire. Your best performances have come about when you have successfully controlled your mind. The two dimensions that we have talked about as producing peak performances or poor performances are these. The ideal attitudes are striving to have fun, feel challenged, feel enthusiastic, and stay relaxed. Poor performances come about when you use the negative forces and attitudes within yourself. It used to be thought that we can only win if we have the grinding mentality, the winning isn't everything is the only thing mentality. This traditional blind determination and dedication to the single-minded goal of beating the competition is an attitude that is very counterproductive, especially in golf. It is a limiting factor in sports and in life. This attitude of blind, rigid, competitive spirit is not the key that will help you to develop your greatest strengths and manage your potential. In fact, it limits your potential in sports. Your energies need to be positive. Practice having more fun. Practice being enthusiastic. When you hit a mediocre shot, use the techniques of champions. Approach the next shot with the attitude, well, what can I sow with this shot? Give yourself instructions on how to hit the shot. Control yourself. Coach yourself. Don't scold yourself. When psychologists studied John Wooden and his basketball teams, they rated and scored each of the comments that he made to his team during practice. And what they found was that the overwhelming proportion of comments that he made to his players were instructions. 68% of all comments that he made to his players were instructions. The second most important proportion was given over to compliments, to encouragement. Nice job, good pick, good hustle, those kinds of comments. And only a tiny, tiny proportion of his statements were scolds or negative reinforcements. Regarding these negative energies and attitudes, these attitudes are the ones that unfortunately we all experience, but we need to strive to eliminate them. They are fear, anxiety, and tension. Let's contrast the positive attitudes that should contrast the negative states. Our goals are to have fun, to feel challenged, to be relaxed. Before you play, remind yourself that you performed a sophisticated mental and physical training program tailored to your needs. you should feel ready, eager to go, prepared, and expecting success. You've done everything that you can to accomplish your goal, so now the task is to create the proper internal environment. You deserve to play well. You deserve to win. Eliminate self-doubt. One of my friends on the Houston Oilers, cornerback Steve Brown, described the ideal pre-competitive attitude this way before he was about to face Steve Largent, the NFL's all-time leading pass receiver. When asked what he thought about facing the best in the game, he said, "I'm going to play the best I can play and hope that's good enough." Well, in this particular game, Largent caught one pass against Steve that day and the Oilers scored an upset victory. One of your major goals in performing has to be giving 100% commitment and 80% effort. Be completely committed to your technique, to your game plan, to your ability to get the job done. When it comes to effort, however, feel like you're always holding back a little. We've all experienced the bad effects from trying too hard. You get too tense, you look for results, you get frustrated, you have fear, you feel that you've given it your best and it's not good enough. In fact, your best is giving 80% effort. Feeling this will help you to stay a little bit more relaxed. It will help you stay a little bit more confident. It's there. It will happen. The 100% commitment, 80% effort strategy helps us to be more comfortable on the golf course. To achieve the proper internal environment, remember that the knowledge of performance is more important than the knowledge of results. There is extensive scientific research to support this. I'll say it again. Your knowledge of performance is more important than your knowledge of results. Try to make the proper swing time after time and sense the feeling of it. The kinesthetic awareness of your good swing. Results will be achieved if you stick to this. And this is even more important in putting. Putt the ball in the right line, the right speed. It may not go in because there are many irregularities on the green. The ball is rolling across an irregular surface. When you hit a 15-foot putt just like you wanted to and it lips out or goes a foot by the hole, tell yourself it was a good putt. Reinforce your success. Here are some other things to consider putting in your game. Stay in the present. Be mentally tough. Be mentally tough enough to not recall previous failures. When you do go in the past, call upon previous successes. Use your personal highlight film to help you perform. Dealing with the bad shot. One of the techniques we use to deal with the bad shots is to make use of your analytical mind. We've already allowed that it's okay to have a short analysis phase after the shot has been launched. But keep this phase short. Put into your brain attic-only information that you can use for your next shot. In this last section, I want to review some of the major issues that we've talked about that consider elevating the self-concept, self-esteem, relaxation, and mental toughness. We need to work hard on building your self-concept or your self-confidence. In order to do this, there are several things that we can do. One is to increase your physical skills, your strength, and your endurance. A conditioning program designed to increase strength and endurance will make you physically stronger and healthier, and you'll experience a significant elevation in your self-image and self-confidence. Work hard to improve your mental skill deficiencies. As you increase your ability to stay calm and relaxed and focused, your self-confidence will steadily rise. As your mental skills in these areas improve, you'll start to truly believe that you possess the kind of self-control necessary to be a champion. Set realistic self-goals. You need success with yourself. Stimulate your motivation. Renew your self-confidence. Think positively, constructively, and create enthusiasm. What you believe about yourself is directly influenced by what you think, your self-talk. Pessimistic and negative thoughts and ideas, they'll erode your efforts to build high confidence. We truly are what we think. Believe in the nutrition analogy. What we feed our brain in terms of our self-image is what we will become. So consistently repeat positive self-affirmations. Listen to what you're telling yourself all day long. This is the method of Taoistic thinking, listening to your body. Never allow the dialogue with yourself to become negative. Say, "I'm a winner, I'm getting tougher, I'm getting better. My confidence is growing, I'm a champion," and do this to the people around you. Dennis Waitley's double win. Help the people around you. They'll grow from it and you will too. Increase your self-discipline. As you exercise a higher degree of self-discipline in your training and in your practice, increase in self-confidence are often realized. Self-discipline provides evidence that you're in control. And use visualization techniques. Seeing is believing. If you can see it happening in your imagination, you can start believing. And develop that personal highlight film, the review film of your previous performances which were successful, and act and play, quote-unquote, as if. When you don't feel self-confident, act as if you did. Act as if you were the champion. Act as if you were winning this tournament. When you start behaving like you're confident, the feelings will often start coming naturally. Increase your awareness of what happens to you under pressure. When, where, how, why does negative energy get triggered during my play? What situations, what thought patterns and perceptions lead to these feelings? And when and where to my muscles becoming, and when and where be aware to my muscles becoming tense and rigid? Under what circumstances am I likely to lose my calmness and my focus? Monitor your breathing. Take deep and prolonged breaths. Use your relaxation training. To achieve a high degree of self-control over negative energy, you must control what you are thinking. Remember, Sherlock Holmes, the brain attic in the garage sale. Focusing on negative and disturbing thoughts produces dramatically different arousal states than focusing on positive and constructive ones. Focusing on your themes of winning and losing, missed opportunities, and poor self-concept only undermines your efforts. Focus on your performance. Focus on the fun. Visualize and rehearse pleasant and relaxing scenes. Have in your memory bank a series of scenes that help you to relax. Peaceful, quiet, relaxing scenes. Create pressure situations during practice. The more you can stimulate the pressure situations that will be present on the golf course during competition, the more opportunities you'll have to play as if there were no pressure. Practicing in pressure situations is an effective strategy for accelerating your learning. Improve your calming and quieting and centering skills. Your ability to appropriately concentrate on the task at hand relates to your management of your thoughts and emotions. Remember, as we discussed previously, excessive arousal usually leads to dramatic narrowing of attention. Perception becomes fixed on inappropriate or irrelevant thoughts, emotions, or aspects of your play. This gives observers the impression that you're blind to the obvious. You're out of touch. Remember, concentration is nothing more than focusing attention on a particular target and holding it there, tuning in what's relevant and tuning out what's irrelevant at the moment. Playing well will require an in-the-present mentality, a here-and-now focus. By sharpening your awareness of whether you're performing here and now or whether your focus is in the future and the past will help you. Consistently focusing on past or future events during your play interferes with performance. The martial arts have taught us the importance of centering. Centering involves establishing a state of perfect balance both mentally and physically. To be centered, you have to be focusing on what's relevant, what's in the here and now, what's in the present. You have to be physically relaxed by having intensity and alertness mentally. If you're having concentration problems during competition, a concerted effort should be made to improve your concentration skills during practice. During practice, work hard to sustain a continuous focus on what's important and block out what's not. You perform as you practice both mentally and physically. Let's start today improving your understanding of your mission and setting your long-term goals, intermediate goals, and short-term goals. Commit your goals to writing and make a date for the completion of each goal. Success is guaranteed every day when the daily short-term goals are properly set. Unless you commit them to paper, the probability of achievement is low. Keep a daily log of your success. It will keep you moving. Associate only with highly self-motivated athletes. Motivation is very contagious, both the positive and negative motivations. Associate with those who can help you. In its purest form, golf is a source of joy. It imitates life. It is life. It is not a separate entity. Your golf game brings out your behavior and your attitudes much more vividly than your experiences in other arenas of life. As the pressure of the game increases, some deep-seated personal characteristics become manifest. We need to change some of the things that get in the way of experiencing joy in golf. And these attitudes and abilities that we deploy to be successful in golf, we can use in the rest of our lives. As we learn to take greater responsibility for our own self-control, for the control in our golf games, we can indeed take greater responsibility for ourselves in every situation and get more joy out of life. I know this. You are a champion human being. I'm glad you're my friend. My hope would be that you'll take some of these ideas and translate them into an improved self-concept and self-efficacy. Good luck. You're the best. So thanks for bearing with me. 23 pages. Apologies for some of my stuttering. I mean, it is kind of hard to read for, 40 straight minutes. Barely drinking water. listening to yourself in your ears. It's also hard to do solo podcasts. Shout out to Colin Cowherd, guy that does them all the time. A couple of thoughts to wrap up. I mean, for me personally, this was something I wanted to go into this year and try and work on more was mental game and figuring out like why I don't play as well under pressure, because in my mind, I've never been one who gets, succumbs to pressure. A club championship or a tournament, like the pressure isn't there. Like I know I'm an amateur golfer. I'm a scratch golfer. I'm not somebody who played in college or is aspiring to play anything, you know, of high relevancy. I think what it is, you know, playing and almost expecting more out of yourself when there's more on the line. And that's almost what I think about. And ultimately what happens is you inevitably prepare different. My good friend Jack Hillen from Winsong talking last year about, you know, tournaments coming up, and he was like, do what you normally do. Like if you go to the golf course an hour early, show up an hour early. Don't show up 2 hours early and do something different with your practice or your routines or whatever it may be. Like you've played really, really well when you just go through your standard stuff. Treat every tournament or important round, whether it be a money game with your friends or a local amateur tournament or a club championship, or maybe you are professional or playing in college. It's really big to prepare the same way. And I think a lot of those concepts came out, in what I just read. I think one of the second things is, you know, I've heard Rick Helling talk about this. You know, he's a guy that I play a lot of golf with, has been on the pod multiple times. But he's talked about how, you know, when it comes to golf, like there's no pressure for him. Like he's prepared and he's practiced, and you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. And I think a lot of that stems from and what I read, they talk about like being around ex athletes or people that have won at the highest level. And he's one of them who's won a World Series, maybe even two. Sorry, Rick, if I'm not getting that right. I'm just going to say two because it's pretty cool. But you know, you get to this point, like I practice, I prepared, I'm at the highest level. I'm going to go out there and give it my best. And I think way too many times people expect to, you know, go out there one day and they're going to have their best, and they do something different, go another day, they're not going to have their best, when in reality, it's the compound of all those things that you've done going out there performing. And some days it's going to be there, and other days when it's not, you need to, you know, go back into that attic and figure out why it wasn't there. Did you prepare differently? Did you have different thoughts? Were you just not as concentrated that day? And this is a concept a lot of people talk about in golf, which is like, you know, I played X amount of good holes, or, you know, I'll have these rounds where I just randomly blow up. Like that's, I've had that thought before. And typically when I go back and, you know, review what those things are, I find that those quote unquote times that I blow up, for me specifically, it's one of those, you know, I have a bad hole and I've been expecting everything to go perfect, and I let that one bad hole kind of compound into a bad round, when in reality, you know, I didn't focus for a shot, or maybe I had a bad break and I let it get to me. And I think when I hear the guys like Scottie Scheffler talk, or any of these amazing athletes, you know, it's about having a short memory. I think John Rahm is famous for saying, you know, have the memory of a goldfish. Like when something bad happens, just move on to the next. Or Tiger talks about, you know, you get like 5 seconds after a bad shot, you got to go and you got to do the next shot. And you're not going to win the golf tournament on your second shot of the day or second hole of the day. You know, golf has a lot of shots and a lot of holes, and you have a lot of opportunities to make up for the bad ones, and the bad ones are going to happen. So I really liked this. You know, it's resonated with me. I think a lot of people can benefit from it, just from the simple concept of working on your mental game and knowing that, you know, your swing, your equipment, it can only take you so far. Eventually you need to focus on preparation. You need to focus on your mental game. You need to focus on how you're concentrating out on the golf course. I think, you know, a lot of people talk about how, you know, they find that perfect mix of like, two or three beers on the golf course. And, you know, after reading this, it kind of hit me. It's like that two or three beers, it gives maybe somebody that confidence of that, like 80% commitment, or 80% effort, 100% commitment. Like they're like, yeah, you know, I'm feeling loose. Like I'm just having fun. I'm in a good state. Like I care, but I don't care, you know, all the way. And that's like when you find that zone and it's trying to find that 100%. Is that what it is? 100% commitment, 80%. You guys know what I'm talking about. But I think it's important. Those rounds were, you know, I 100% commitment, 80% effort. That's what it is. Those rounds that I've gone low, and I've seen everything come together in an 18 hole round, you know, there's, yeah, maybe a little bit of pressure, but you're having fun with it. You know, you're not super uptight about every single shot. You're going through your process. You're trusting all the work that you've put into. And I think, you know, a lot of people can improve their games simply by taking some of these concepts, try putting them into play, try like writing down a couple goals for the day. One thing I've done a lot this year is, you know, before a round, I'll think, you know, what are the three things I want to focus on today? Like making sure I'm committed to my line on my putts, or making sure my alignment off the tee is really well, or whatever it may be. And when you're like just focused on those three things and you're checking those before all your specific shots or process, it's amazing how much better you play and more confident you're playing when you're not thinking about anything else, right? It's like just those three, as opposed to, you know, I was out playing the North Course the other day at Winsong, phenomenal, by the way. Could not wait to do our live podcast out there. Sometime in August, we'll be bringing you guys a preview of the North Course. But for the first four or five holes, I unfortunately had to sit on a call and we're doing like wedding planning stuff. And my mind just was not on the course. Like I wasn't there. We moved our tee time up an hour and I wasn't there for that first hour. And I think I doubled the first hole, maybe three putt and made a bogey, parred, had another three putt and then hit one right. Also, I'm like, I'm five over and I finally hang up this call. And then I think through the next like 15 holes, I know I had another double bogey, but I made a couple birdies and I strung a bunch of pars together. And, you know, in hindsight, I'm looking back like, man, I wasn't there mentally. Like I was thinking about other stuff. I wasn't focused at all. And you know, those are the days that, you know, you need to be realistic about, you know, are you out there to have fun? Are you out there committed to your game? Are you practicing stuff, whatever it may be? But just being like aware of your surroundings and what's going on for that specific round or your game at the moment, if you're practicing some stuff, and then trying to get yourself in a really good spot for that, you know, big tournament or big round that you have coming up. And, again, a lot of these concepts are awesome. I think they're really relevant, especially with a lot of Scottie Scheffler's, thoughts this week where people are joking about him, you know, almost like not caring about the outcomes, right? And saying, you know, what am I even doing this for? But if you really unpack it and you take some of the concepts from what I just read and like what he's saying, it's all true and relevant. Like he has probably the best mental approach to the game right now than anybody else in golf. And you look at his swing and it's a little unorthodox and he, you know, his feet are all over the place and people wonder like, how's he make it work? Like he's getting the most out of the swing that he has and his mental game is above and beyond everybody else in the game right now, which is what's helping him go on this tear. So thanks for sticking with me I probably haven't had to read anything that long out loud since high school, maybe, or maybe sometime in college. So it's been a while. So appreciate you guys sticking with me. I got a lot of good content coming up this week and next week. 3M Open is going to be in town this weekend here in Minneapolis. August, September is tournament time for a lot of people here in Minnesota. So good luck with your club championships and members. And we'll see you on the next episode.